Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
Drinking some Matt Elf from Trogues Brewing Company here in Pennsylvania.
That's solid. What is that now? Is that an IPA?
No, it's their annual like winter lager type deal.
Oh, okay.
But it's like 11%. And I'm not gonna lie.
You can't handle the 11%, is what you're telling me.
I have been drinking some lighter beers recently, so I can drink more of them. And now I would just want to sit down and enjoy a beer. And I took a sip of it and I was like, man, that I'm going to be drunk right after this one.
How do you get an 11% beer and then put it in a can in a koozie? Like, you don't even put it in a glass. You're like an animal. You're like the most yinzer I've ever met in my entire yinz in life.
I don't usually
drink. Who
takes
a craft beer that's 11% and drinks it out of a can with his koozie on it? What, is that your Yeti koozie? Is that what that is?
Yeah, this is one of my, I think this is like an Ozark Trail.
Oh, it's a Yeti knockoff is what it is.
Yeah.
You have your can of 11% local craft brew in a Yeti knockoff that you're drinking out of a can. That's how you party.
Yeah, that's how
that's
I
embarrassing.
Roll.
That's embarrassing. Nothing we're going to say about the Pirates organization tonight is going to be more embarrassing than that.
Oh, I don't know about that, Chris. I told you before the show that I had something good lined up for you. I looked through the Pirates transactions starting in December. We did make a minor league signing, Paul DeJong. We got him off the Astros. He actually was a fairly touted prospect at one point, but that's not what I want to talk about. He is the 23rd move, the transaction the Pirates have made since December. Almost half of those transactions are giving guys new uniform numbers. I kid you not.
Really? There's like been a big change in uniform numbers?
I guess there was 10 different new uniform numbers assigned.
Is it like minor leaguers that used to have the uniform number of like 70 something that they think now are going to be like parts of the team, so they change their uniform number? Is it like what led to the change? What did you see in it most?
It's basically the guys that, you know, were called up during the year last year, or maybe weren't sure if they were going to make the team. I don't know, maybe their favorite number became available when Trevor Williams is gone. I'm not really sure. It's like, Trevor had my number, now I get it. Like,
Right. That's fine. It's fine. It works. It's okay. So I was looking at something really interesting. That is actually amazing. That's a ton of transactions. That's a solid amount. There's not everybody's doing that, but for half of them to be uniform numbers is pretty incredible to me. So I was looking at something the other day I think you would get a kick out of. Because I went back and I looked at teams that went through rebuilds, right? And generally what happens with a team that goes through a rebuild is that they're a team that has a lot of burdensome contracts, right? They've got to get out from underneath those burdensome contracts. They've got to, you know, shed some payroll. They've got to lower themselves down a little bit. And then they go young and they lose. And since everybody's controllable, they've got a very low payroll, and then later when they come back, the payroll goes back up again. And then I look up the Pirates. Like, the average team, whether it be the Astros, the Padres, the White Sox, the Cubs, the Royals when they did their rebuild. I mean, there's so many different teams that have gone through this in the last decade. They normally are sitting somewhere between like the 10th and 15th highest payroll in the league when they start the rebuild. Then they drop down to being one of the bottom three, and then they come back up to that level. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Pirates have been 27th in Major League Baseball, 28th in Major League Baseball, and in 2020 were the 30th out of 30 teams when it came to payroll. So I don't know how you can get lower than already being the lowest. And it just struck me as hysterically funny because, like, normally when you do a rebuild, there's some sort of like, well, you know, we're gonna save this money for later. But there's no money to save because of what a ridiculously low payroll the Pirates carry year in and year out. And then when you add in the competitive balance tax, which is a thing that calculates based upon where their location is and then what they spent, they actually are even lower because some teams that have spent less money than them get taxed more because they're in bigger markets and they were in the middle of a rebuild, where the Pirates just sit dead last basically in almost every year. It's amazing to me. They only spent $23 million in 2020. Like, I know it was a shortened season, but most baseball teams can make $23 million in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, $23 million is not that much when you're talking about billion-dollar baseball organizations. That's nothing. And that's all they spent in 2020. So on one hand, they have this incredible financial flexibility, of course. But on the other hand, it goes back to something we've talked about. Ownership's never going to be a high payroll. It's always going to be a very low payroll. The highest payroll that the Pirates had in comparison to the rest of Major League Baseball since the year 2001, they were the 19th highest payroll in baseball at $57 million. Now, they have spent more than $57 million, but in comparison to Major League Baseball, they've only been the 19th highest payroll in baseball once over the first 20 years of this century. They've been 20th twice. And in the fourth highest year that they had, they were 24th in payroll out of 30. So Ben Cherington has this incredible like mountain in front of him that he has to figure out how to climb because he has to figure out how to run his organization knowing that there'll never be a big payroll. It's probably time for the Pirates to start operating more like the Tampa Bay Rays because they're never going to be able to operate like most Major League Baseball teams do.
Yeah, and for most teams coming out of a rebuild, and like you said that, Chris, and even in this year, I mean, I know that there's team spending, and that's been like a big thing, but then you see a team like the Indians just dump, what was it, $44 million in payroll to drop down below the Pirates, but not that I'm justifying what the Indians did.
You can't justify what the Indians did. The Indians consistently take big talent and let that talent walk. You see, there's plenty of other fan bases that have to deal with cheap ownership.
Yeah.
And the Pirates at least know what they're dealing with. The Indians give their fan base hope and then cut their legs out from underneath them and let guys that are going to end up going into the Hall of Fame eventually go in a different hat because Francisco Lindor is going to play for a long time. And if you're a Indians fan, I would almost argue that your heart is ripped out more because you actually were led to believe it might be different this time around. And you went to a World Series in the last decade. Whereas with Pirates fans, they don't even sniff it. Like it's just basically like you're predisposed to the idea that your team is going to be one of the bottom five payrolls in baseball every year. And you're not going to the World Series unless lightning strikes perfectly and all the stars align. And that's why it's on Cherington not to run the team like other teams run their teams. Like, if anybody's ever watched the movie Moneyball, which is not as good as the book itself is a much better read, not only for what Billy Bean was doing in Oakland, but also just an idea of the situation he was in. But the famous line in it is that he looks at everybody and he goes, there's 29 teams, then there's a load of crap, and below that there's us. What's funny is you could use that for the Pirates payroll, but he came up, I mean, he kind of stole from Bill James and he had other people that helped him with a sabermetric system that was ahead of the curve, and figured out how to glean off of that and do very well. The Tampa Bay Rays have a way that they do business that, while it is criticized, it still gives them more winning seasons than losing seasons and keeps them in the hunt. It gets back to the argument that we had, because it kind of struck me after we talked last time about, well, there are people that don't want to operate that way. Well, what's your solution then? I would love to hear somebody else's solution, because you're going to have to operate differently. If it's not like the Rays and it's not like the Oakland A's, it can't be like the Yankees. It can't be like the Reds. Most teams, the vast majority, will operate in a different way than you do. So Charrington has to almost come up with a new way of doing things just to be able to go out there and be successful.
You see teams, like, even just in this, where I was going is, the only teams that are in this type of system right now that are even spending are the Padres, the Mets, the Royals, I still don't really get, and the Tigers. Now, the Mets are spending because they have a new owner. The Padres are spending because they have a new principal owner.
The Mets are spending smart. The Mets wanted JT Realmuto. But when the agent pulled the classic move of trying to find other people to also get in on the bidding to raise the price, the Mets said, we're not playing that game. We're not bidding against ourselves. Take it or leave it. And when they called the Mets bluff, it turns out the Mets weren't bluffing, and they signed James McCann. Trevor Bauer's got this young hotshot agent, this female agent who used to be the gymnast. And it's like a Jerry Maguire story. Like, this is her only client. And they're gonna change the way the two of them, how free agency works. Some people think it's cool, and some people think they're nuts. I'm starting to think they're a little nuts because they're not getting taken seriously. The Mets were the team that had all the money, and they were hoping if it wasn't the Mets he was going to, they could at least use the Mets as leverage. But when the Mets went out and made the trade that they made, where they basically gave up nothing, that was a pile of crap they gave to the Indians. To go out and pick up an all-star future Hall of Fame shortstop and a pitcher who was a 20-game winner with a whip that was right around one, like he had a reliever's walks and hits per innings pitched in Carlos Carrasco before he got cancer. There's no reason to believe he can't return to that form this year in his first full season back and his first fully healthy season back. So what they did is they said, we could go get Bauer, or we can get a guy that's equal to or better than him before he ended up sick for a few years and beat cancer. So now we've solved that. We don't need to worry about that. We got DeGrom and Syndergaard. Now we throw in Carlos Carrasco. We're fine. We don't need to deal with your stuff. And more we're seeing these free agents. They don't have a market because there's not enough people that are spending. But even the Mets came up with a different way of doing things, and they got plenty of money to spend.
Yeah, and the Padres, I mean, they looked at their situation and said, we could trade, you know, a lot of the farm and get two pitchers for pretty much the annual value of what Bauer's asking for. If you look at it, I mean, because that was another team he was trying to court, was saying, hey, I want to come back to San Diego. Now he's staying the Angels. I mean, he's courting everybody. But there's a couple of teams that he was going at pretty hard, because I think he realized that, you know, the Padres were looking at maybe I'm possibly going for it. One of those teams that's setting up, like, okay, we got to go against the Dodgers, so we got to go out and get something because, you know, our young guns are pretty fun, but is this going to be enough to get us to the World Series? But they built up a nice farm system, and people say maybe they traded too much. We'll see it at some point in time. But for the most part, they didn't give up like a ton. I mean, the Rays got a decent package from them, but the Cubs got a whole lot of nothing.
Are you a CFO, HR professional, or owner of a company, big or small, and you're tired of the typical health insurance premium increases each and every year? Out of control premiums with no end in sight. Well, now there is the Elite Benefits Formula. This process has saved employers and their employees thousands or even tens of thousands of dollars each year. These strategies are avoided by most insurance professionals, and the insurance companies definitely do not want you to know about them. But Elite Benefits of America is ready to help you. Just about all employers can now take advantage of some or all of these strategies and start saving money. Butch Zimar from Elite Benefits of America wants you to reach out to him today. Visit elitebenefits.net or call 708-535-3006. What do you think would be an interesting new way to look at constructing a lineup? Because I've always thought that, you know, everybody focused on, first of all, the offensive metrics. Now they figured out, like, positioning and things like that for defense. But I still think that deep down, and I got this idea watching the postseason in 2020, because of an injury and because of the way that things were playing in Oakland, I saw the White Sox put out three Gold Glove caliber outfielders. And the A's, who are built to, you know, launch angle and all this other stuff, if they couldn't hit it out of the ballpark, everything was being caught. And I'm wondering, with the budget that the Pirates have, defense does not cost a lot of money. And so the idea that had been ruminating in my head was, instead of trying to compete with everybody else, what would you think if the Pirates, and maybe this is something that they're already working on when you look at the amount of arms that Ben Cherington's trying to get, but what if you went with a system in which you focused almost purely on defense? You're going to need to have some run scores, but you want to have a lot of 2-1 ball games. And maybe if that's working, that's when you go to your owner midway through the season and say, we need one more hitter here to start making those 3-1 ball games. Because I keep trying to think, like, where can you get players on the cheap? Offense draws money. Defense doesn't. And there are guys out there that can cover the entire field and just suck up everything that's out there on the field. Like, imagine if you had do you ever play Strat-O-Matic baseball?
I did, yeah.
So just to explain to people if they've never played Strat-O-Matic baseball, the players have cards. I want to say it's the pitchers have 1, 2, and 3. You have a red die and then 2 white die. Okay. So the red die, if it lands on 1, 2, or 3, you look at the pitcher's card. If it lands on 4, 5, or 6, you look at the hitter's card. So there's like an equal chance that it's going to be, was the batter the reason that the play happened, or was it the pitcher? And then depending on what the tendencies are in the guy's stats, different dice combinations, and think of it, the ones that are like sitting at 7, there's like so many different ways you can end up with a 7, but it's very hard to find a 2. So if you got a guy who's always like a home run in the 2 column, that means he barely hits home runs. If you got a guy who's home run 7, he's going to hit 40 over a season. And you can play full seasons, and the stats will work out basically to where they're at. And one of the things they do is they rate defensive players. And your superstars are 1s. And you're very just underneath a superstar is a 2. Your average player sits as a 3, and you got a lot of 4s and 5s that are out there. And what comes into play is, throughout the game, there are multiple times in where defense, range, and all these things take away hits. And I would sit around and experiment with, like, what if I had a team full of 1s? Like, all defense 1s out there. Maybe a 2 at first base, because it's like impossible to find a defense 1, right? And what you would find is you could sit down with somebody in Strat-O-Matic and you could make their life a living hell. Every player they would have, they either had to hit a home run, or they were gonna have to hope that something fell in the middle of this team with this incredible range out there. Now think of you right now, what you could go out and get Jerod Dyson again if you wanted to, right? Nothing but speed and defense. He would cover so much room out there. Like, think about all the guys that are right now floating around that are on the free agent list that are excellent defensive players, but they can't hit worth a lick. Perfect example. Who is it? Yomer Sanchez won a Gold Glove the other year. He's been passed around to 4 teams. Won a Gold Glove at second base.
Yeah.
And, you know, imagine if you had a team full of guys like that. That'll play small ball, drop down bunts, play a lot of defense, and then the pitchers you want to get is you want to find pitchers that are ground ball inducing pitchers. And there's stats on this. Like, I think Dallas Keuchel is the leader in it. I can't remember who was number 2, But Keuchel was not, I mean, like, there are guys out there that are ground ball inducing pitchers that don't put a lot of guys on base and don't give up a lot of fly balls. Like, think about that's how the Rockies try to operate. They try to find guys that won't let the ball get up into the air, right? So let's say you start building a pitching staff that doesn't allow for a lot of the home runs, meaning the ball gets put into play a lot. And then you have fielders that can cover all kinds of ground. You forget the shift. You have made it almost impossible to string together a couple of hits. If your guys don't mind if they put the ball in the play, but they're not going to give up the big fly, and they rely on the defense to play defense, and you find a three and a four, if you just find a couple of them that could put together hits, and you start to do the opposite of what they do in the Bill James Bible, what they do with Moneyball. And instead of the whole thing with, like, just, you know, get on base, create runs, but more guys that are really quick can manufacture things, and you start playing that style of ball, teams aren't even set up to defend against that now, are they?
No, and that's...
like, they'd be completely confused about how to handle that, because that era of baseball has passed us by. Is the new market inequality 1955 baseball?
It could be.
And the Pirates could have a $50 million payroll and play that. And they could find those players and put that kind of team together. I mean, am I nuts? Because I keep thinking to myself, you've got to find something nobody else is doing, because you're never going to compete money-wise.
No, and I'll say, I mean, I looked at it, and I know other people have looked at it over the past few years down in the minors. We have some of the guys with some of the best speed and, like, a lot of stolen bases and everything, and that are good defenders. And you got to get hits to get on base, but
you can walk.
You can walk. And the way that catching is being built now for a lot of teams is, you know, are you going for the defensive catcher, the offensive catcher? A lot of teams, they don't care who's behind the plate as long as the guy hits. And if that's the way that's going, and you get guys, like, out there trying to steal bases and stuff, you might throw some teams off by, you know, trying to do with what not a lot of people do, with the hit and runs, with the, you know, God forbid, a bunting some guy over or something, if somebody's really good at laying down, like, a nice little suicide squeeze or something. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be, especially on a team right now that has no power, and it feels like you're almost trying to manufacture power within the system where there are only a couple guys that have the power potential, but there's a whole lot of guys down there that it's like, we don't know how he's going to hit, but man, he can field center field, like Travis Swaggerty, who's, you know, a good guy to get on base, a good guy to, you know, he's fast, plays good defense, but they're always wondering about how is he going to hit. You know, Jared Oliva, who they brought up last year, who can, you know, field any of the outfield positions, and, you know, it's pretty much one of the faster guys on their team, and racks up stolen bases in the minors like crazy. So Charrington,
like, if you were trying to put this together this year, the guy you would want to go out and sign right now if you were the Pirates to put behind the plate would be Tyler Flowers. And the reason you would go and get him is because metrically, defensively, he saves more runs than anybody else that's available out there. Okay, now another guy that saves a ton of runs but doesn't do anything, like, he's a zero offensive war. His war is 0.0. But guess who went out and signed him? Tampa Bay on December the 16th. Why? Because he's pretty much what Flowers is, but was even cheaper. And that's Mike Zunino. And there are guys out there that do extremely well defensively that actually help pitchers and are good at framing and things like that. Like, that's what the Pirates, I'm telling you, man, I'm becoming more and more convinced of it, because it's hard to look at it and say, well, everything I've learned about baseball over the last 20 years is on-base percentage, keep guys off base, and defensive metrics don't mean as much. They become like, they're the nerdiest thing, right? But there was a point when on-base percentage was the nerdiest thing. There was a point when calculating a guy's whip was the nerdiest thing. Well, now everybody does that. And I think to myself, now you have managers that don't do situational hitting. You have guys that don't hit to the right side of the field to advance the runner from first to third. What the Pirates need to do, if they're not going to be able to invest in talent, They have to invest in their minor league system and make sure that people are being taught a specific brand of baseball that's Pirates baseball, where you give yourself up and you advance runners, where you take the extra base and you need to fill your team with speed and defense and pitching. And offense almost is a happy accident that you get. And because then at least you can lay a base with a $40 million payroll and go out and find yourself a guy that's going to hit 40 home runs and is an on-base machine that sits in the middle of the lineup and knocks in those two guys that got the little dink hit and the little bunt that moved him over and somehow beat out the throw to first, and then that guy hits a three-run home run, you win 3-2.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to invest your money, relievers are a dime a dozen if you can find the guy that keeps the ball down and you invest in defense. I feel like looking at this, and I'm going to say this again, you know, this is not, I know I sound like a crackpot here, but we're talking about a team in which their year-end 40-man rated 25th or lower for the last 5 years and never got above 24 for their year-end 40-man roster since 2003 for their year-end 40-man roster. Their roster that actually is playing on the field, whether it be a 25-man roster, 26-man roster, in 2020 was a 30-man roster, the roster that was on the field barely ever gets the 20 or 19th highest. It generally sits 25th or lowest. So you have an owner who is not going to spend money. In the good years or the bad years, there is no money to spend. And so if that is the restriction that you have, you can gnash your teeth about it and hope that somehow you strike gold, where somehow you're able to get all these prospects together and they're all good for a window of about a year or two before their arbitration makes them somebody that he walks in your office and says, don't tender that guy. He's going to end up making $10 million. I can't afford that. Because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because he ain't going to go over that. That's it. He's never done it. When the ballpark is packed or not packed, he's at the bottom of the Major League Baseball spending. So if that's what you're dealing with, I know I sound like a psycho, but guess what? Defense is cheap. Speed is cheap. You know, develop young arms. Use the Tampa Bay system of never letting them go and see the other lineup a third time. Use that system and have a bunch of arms. And then have speed and defense and a manager that thinks in that style, which is different from what the majority of guys are doing. That gives you at least a puncher's chance. It might not be flashy, but yeah. Trust me, you're going to love two-hour ball games that finish 3-2 on a weeknight. You get home in time to put your kid to bed on time. You're going to love it. It's going to be amazing. That's what they could be. They could be at least that.
Yeah, because, I mean, it kind of looks at the team like this past year where, I mean, other than us talking about before that, you know, Bell was not comfortable with the swing and the stuff that we said about that, but a lot of the other guys kind of seemed to be like they were thinking too much and were trying to hit a little bit too much for power. Like a guy like Brian Reynolds, who just basically his job is, I'm going to make contact with the ball, and guess what? Some of them might go over the fence, but I don't really care because I'm going to find gaps. I'm going to, you know, dink some in. I'm going to, you know, hit some the opposite way. I mean, even a guy like, you know, Kevin Newman, who doesn't have a whole lot of power, he's like, I'm going to get infield hits. I'm going to leg them out. I'm going to do whatever. And it kind of seemed like everybody was trying to hit for more power. Now, it worked out a little bit better for Colin Moran because he's a guy that had maybe a little bit more power left in there. But for some of these guys, they are the types of hitters that they are, and they're not power hitters. So, Chris, you're not crazy. I mean, you are crazy because it's basically saying, let's go back to the, you know, small ball era. But you're also not crazy in that just having the players play to their strengths and not try to make them something that they're not.
Right, because what you're trying to do right now, if that's what you're trying to do, you're trying to stick a square peg in a round hole in a budget that will never be able to compete. Even if you develop the guy and teach him how to hit with launch angle and he becomes a 30 home run hitter with speed, the moment he's worth something, your owner's not going to pay him. If he's good, he's not going to stay because he's going to be worth too much. You got this fool Trevor Bauer walking around who wants to have the highest annual average value to his contract of any pitcher ever. He takes Gerrit Cole getting that money personally for some reason. Maybe they don't like each other.
I mean, they were teammates. I don't know.
But he made fun of him on Twitter. He sat there and he said, somehow he got more spin rate. I wonder how he did it. Now this thing comes out over the past week that Gerrit Cole is basically caught on in an email asking for illegal substances to put on the ball.
With a winky emoji. The dude used a winky emoji.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day it's different. They change, but they don't know what they want. All they need.